Today's guest says, I used to have a turbulent brain. We'll find out why in just a moment. Hello, everyone. My name is Pamela Brewer. Welcome to this edition of Mind Talk. And I'd like to welcome today's guest, Nancy G. Shapiro, who is the author of The Book of Calm. Nancy, welcome to Mind Talk.
Thank you, Pamela. This is a great honor.
Well,
looking forward to.
Let me read the entire title of the book, because goodness knows, I think we could certainly use it today. So again, it is The Book of Calm, Clarity, Compassion, and Choice in a Turbulent World. And that is exactly what we're living in these days, isn't it?
It certainly is. It certainly is.
Nancy Shapiro is described as a professional certified coach, author, blogger, and workshop leader. Her expertise is in supporting people through the inevitable shifts of personal and professional transitions while celebrating their resilience, their spirit, and their wisdom. Nancy, what does that mean?
Well, my clients come to me wanting to change something in their lives, whether it be their work, a relationship, their anxiety, their feeling stuck, whatever they want to have change in their life so they have more well-being. And so when you get... when I work with them, all the negative things come out at first, and yet as I listen to their stories and as they listen to their own stories, they find that they have incredible wisdom from all that they have experienced in the past, and they have an incredible resilience. And I believe that in times of turbulence, we forget those two things. That we have this resilience, this sort of fire in the belly that seems to go away when things are chaotic, changing too fast, and our brain is turbulent like mine used to be. So that's why I always add that about one's own inner wisdom and resilience, because I've not met a person yet who doesn't have that.
You describe your own brain as one that would react to lots of little things and like to believe that it was in control of things. Well, lots of people would hear that and say, yeah, you're supposed to react to lots of little things, to everything. And of course, your brain has to be in control. What do you say to those folks?
Well, the word reaction is a knee-jerk type of response. It's automatic. It's often mindless in the way that I see it. And there's no mindfulness and awareness about what is going on right then and there. So I say that to change reaction to response, reaction to clarity is the key, one of the keys to becoming calmer as we walk through our daily lives in this constantly changing, turbulent, and seemingly chaotic world at times.
There are those who would say the world is so busy that being calm is just too passive a route to take, and that you can't be calm if you're actually going to get things done. You disagree with that. Why?
I do, because the calm I write about is not passive. It's an ongoing awareness practice that changes reaction into clarity, our tendency to blame into compassion, and our confusion and anxiety into wiser choices. And so there can be, you can be so busy, or a situation at work or out in the public can be incredibly chaotic. Yet when we find that calm within us, we become more aware of what's really going on. We're in the present moment, and we see that there are over 7.5 billion other people on this planet who see the world absolutely different than ourselves. So it isn't a passive calm. It's not laying in your hammock on a wonderful beach somewhere and never getting up except to get another drink or, you know, go eat something. So it's very active.
Well, you make the point that there are many, many people beside oneself living in the world who actually may have different views from you. And you know that there are those people who wish to set about changing the views of the other when the other seems to be different from oneself. Isn't that a reasonable pursuit?
Well, that is not something that creates calm, that creates a calmer world, that creates understanding. It is not about changing other people's views. It's about the very difficult practice, I must admit, of finding some tiny point sometimes, or a larger point of understanding with someone who has different views than oneself. And as the world stands now, it doesn't seem like much of that is going on. There's such division and moments of violence and disasters happening all the time, and we can become just what, you know, I've heard people say, there's too much, I can't recover from all of it. It's just too much happening all at once. And that's true. And so the calm is also the paradoxical state of realizing that, yes, and I am feeling upset, I am feeling helpless, I'm feeling powerless today, I can't do anything about this. And if I sit here for a moment and pause and think of something I can do right now with myself, my own family, my own community, and take one step at a time, some small action toward well-being and calm, toward compassion, and the clarity that it takes to make a wiser choice, then that ripples out into the world.
So, in fact, the ability to sort of be with oneself and make the choice, which we can make, and we often don't realize that, but make the choice that we can make to do one small thing can be enormously powerful and contribute to the change that we hope for.
Yes, yes. It's the small actions that we take, yet they are often actions. And they are where we touch the world, as we go about our daily lives, because that's what we can do. We don't have to do something huge, because it does. Calm is infectious. So as we each become more calm, our families become calmer, they go out into the world, their reactions are perhaps become over time more responsive, and it is just a continuous chain of calm that ripples out.
You speak in the Book of Calm about the death of your father. How did that affect you?
It's my core old story, this is what I call the stories that we all carry in our bodies, in our brains, in our actions, in our thoughts, in our the way we speak to people. They are stories that are caused when our brains fire together, when an event happens and strong emotions happen at the same time. So when I heard the sheriff at our door at 3 a.m. tell my mother that, ma'am, there's been an accident, part of my world died along with my father. And part of me died along with that. And it sank very deep into my body and my entire self. And our family was silent, and his death exacerbated that silence. And so we all have these traumatic stories. His death was a suicide attempt followed by him getting in his truck and having an accident, which he died from. And so suicide and not knowing why has been haunting me, or had haunted me, for years, until I came to use certain awareness tools that I share with clients and in the book. And I saw that there was no way I could know who my father was and why he did what he did. I could choose to understand that he was that smiling, loving father, and he was someone so haunted with his own pain that he couldn't live anymore. And that's a big step. And that's it's not easy, and yet I have come to a place, and clients have come to a place, and friends and family have come to this place of calm around their own old stories.
And it's a powerful place to be, and in the immediate instant of hearing or experiencing the event, it's very hard to imagine that you can actually get there.
Yes, it is. I mean, I write in the book that that story, all my silence and my reaction and my turbulent brain part of me, it was a story that defined my life for almost 30 years. And I went back to school when I was 53. And finished college, which I could not finish because of the circumstances of my life back then when I was 19 and my father died. And I went back to school and finished. And that is what brought me the tools, the awareness, the mindfulness, the knowing that there were other ways of being in the world instead of being defined by my stories. I could be informed by them. They could be still part of me, yet I could have compassion for others who have similar or even more difficult stories than my own. I could listen. I could be of service. I could do all of these small actions within my own life that helped others, because I went through something so traumatic.
When you say that your life was defined for so many years by the loss of your dad, what do you mean by that?
It colored the way I looked at the world. There were other dynamics going on in my family, secrets and silence, and no one spoke about the suicide note on the wall that he left, about all these time gaps, all these secrets that had been running around. And so that was an unanswered why, an unanswered mystery that continued to haunt me in a way. And what came out of his death and those few days afterwards is that I came to think that in the world, terrible things always happen. And so for those 30 years, that is really the line that defined my life. My favorite word was no, because I couldn't risk anything. I couldn't do anything new because something terrible might happen. And so we create these sort of one-liners in the time of consequences after these events that define our life. We think, oh, I'm bad. I'm not worthy. Terrible things are always going to happen. Whatever your own reaction to the consequences or to an event, those are the consequences. And those are the stories and that one line of that sentence that continually repeats throughout your life that calm, the practice of calm uncovers. And once it's uncovered, one can start to look at it differently.
So, in fact, what I hear you saying again is that the power within that we all have that we very often tend to ignore or not even know exists is in fact there. It is in fact powerful. And we can choose to affect change within our own spirit.
Absolutely. And I say that with great confidence, just from my own experience and, again, from watching coaching clients uncover their old stories, uncover that one line that has defined their life, and then take actions to create a different way of looking at their own world.
There came a time in your life, and this was certainly after the death of your dad, that you made the decision to move to Mexico, which, you know, for some folks would think, wow, what a neat thing to do. What a wonderful thing to do. And clearly you'd had enough trauma in your life already. Did your move to Mexico, in fact, turn out to be less trauma or more trauma?
No, the actual move was incredibly traumatic also because my boyfriend at the time, now my husband of 24 years, on the night, Christmas night of 1995, we were driving down the west coast of Mexico to Puerto Vallarta to meet friends, and we were robbed by four armed bandits. And we thought we were dead. Circumstances happened. Their lookout disappeared. They drove away with what loot they'd taken out of our fully packed car and left us standing in this cornfield, but they left the keys in the back of the truck and in the tailgate. And after that, it took me a year to recover from that. Writing helped. I wrote an article in our local English newspaper here in San Miguel and wrote about the dangers of traveling at night. We were traveling at night. And it wasn't just in Mexico, it's in any strange country, it's not a good idea. But that's when I started to see that change is inevitable and that the wisdom that comes from every single experience, from disruptive change to fearful times to traumatic events, to just smaller things in one's life, that's where we gather our experience which within that experience there is wisdom. And that wisdom accumulates over the years. And so I've lived in Mexico now for over 15 years, two different times, for 7 years, 7.5 years each. And the robbery is just a tale. It no longer gets my heart beating. It no longer affects the way I interact with my neighbors or within the culture of Mexico. It is, however, when we travel in Mexico, we do not travel at night. It's a learning.
Nancy, we're going to take a break, and when we come back, we will continue this conversation. Folks, I am having a dialogue with Nancy G. Shapiro, who is the author of The Book of Calm. Nancy, the night that you and your then-boyfriend were stopped, there were several things that actually happened that night. But one of the outcomes of that you identify as the beginning of your honoring your own intuition, which so many people don't do. Why was that the beginning, and what had your intuition been that day?
Well, it was Christmas Day, and we woke up in a town in northwest Mexico, and we had a flat tire, and we didn't get an early start. It took about 3 hours to fix the tire, find a tire on Christmas Day, and this small town. And I just had an intuition that this day was what I call, it was tilting toward chaos. Now I listen to that feeling in my stomach. We got a late start. It started to get dark. I wanted to go one way. My boyfriend wanted to go another way. And as we were making that decision, these blinking lights, like a police car, which you stop in the United States, you stop when a police car comes up behind you. And we were incredibly naive at that point. And it was four bandits disguised as policemen. And so now I honor my intuition about anything and everything, small or large. If something doesn't feel right in my body, I say, okay, this doesn't feel right. Let's not do this. I think I'll explore this more, get more information, whatever the circumstance might be. But to honor our intuition along with our real-time, intellectual part of us, all of us, our intellect, the way our heart feels about something, our intuition, how our body feels, that's very important. I call those four aspects of knowing, I call them the circles of knowing. And to be aware of how much our body tells us is another part of becoming calmer.
And it's also an empowering tool because you recognize that you perhaps are not as alone as you might feel in the moment. You are not as much at the whim of circumstances beyond your control in the moment. You can pay attention to yourself and get good wisdom from that.
Exactly, Pamela. That's an incredibly good statement. Very clarifying, because perhaps the listeners will relate to this. You go to a party or a gathering, you know, of your neighborhood for a 4th of July picnic or something, and there can maybe be 50 people there or 30 people or a dozen people, and there are people that you can sense that you can connect to, you can talk to, and others that something within you says, I don't quite want to talk with them right now, at least. And that's your body telling you a piece of information. You know, there's other things. Maybe you're just too shy also to talk to a rather extroverted person. And then as the party goes on and you overhear something and you go, wow, that person sounds interesting, maybe I can overcome my shyness. But to at first be aware of what your body is telling you, what your senses are telling you, is an incredibly empowering stance to be in the world.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You talk about chaos theory. So you've created a book that is entitled The Book of Calm, and then you bring in the concept of chaos theory. So talk about that.
Well, it's the paradoxical nature of living on this planet, of being human. There can't be light without shadow. You know, you can't feel strong. You don't really understand the sense of being strong, physically strong in your body, unless you've felt weak and flabby. It's the two sides of things are the many sides of things. Yet it's the paradox, because within chaos theory, the basic tenet is that within chaos there is an innate order. So most of us have seen huge flocks of birds that leave a field and it just feels like a tornado of wings. At first sight, it looks like this incredible chaotic mass, and yet it forms into this incredibly ordered, moving mass of little flying bodies, these birds, who have created order out of a multitude of separate entities. And that is how nature works, according to chaos theory. And in my experience, that is what happens. Like when Barry and I were robbed, each of us froze and were able to take action to pack up the car after the robbers had thrown everything out of the car. At first it was me. I said, I'll turn on the hubs of the car. It was a four-wheel drive. Said, I found the keys. I said, turn on the lights. You get out there. You pick up that side of the car. I'll pick up things from this side of the car. And then later, it was me who froze, and he took action. And we alternated throughout the day with that. And so it's a natural part of being in our world. There can be one thing, wow, this is really a great thing is happening today, and I feel incredibly nervous and unable to focus. So holding those two things, just like my father, here he is, my father who laughed and I loved, and then this man, this human being, who did something unthinkable and unexplainable. So to hold the paradox of events, people, circumstances, and our own feelings is also an empowering stance to be in the world.
You know, the idea that many of us just as human beings have, that everything should go along its course in a particular predictable way, and that that's the quote-unquote right way. And then we tell ourselves we're completely flustered when it doesn't go the right way. You know, it's really it's a misnomer. It's certainly unfair. And what you're speaking to and what you speak to throughout the Book of Calm is the notion that change really is inevitable and that you really can survive. And let's figure out a way not to be so stopped. In other words, let's figure out a way to actually move forward through the change, fear notwithstanding, because we can.
Exactly. Exactly. We just can't, because not only death and taxes are inevitable, change is inevitable. I mean, just look at something as simple as the seasons that occur every 3 or 4 months in most places on the planet. I mean, that is a huge change. I hear that it's rather cold on the East Coast this weekend, and here in Mexico, it's not that cold at all. We're in the 70s, yet the trees are losing their leaves. Things continually change, and the more we actually use nature as an example of change, I feel that we can embrace it more. And that's a word that I really love, is embrace, to embrace the paradox, to embrace the change, instead of trying to push it away or push the paradoxical, like, oh, I have to push this aspect of this paradoxical circumstance. I have to push that away and only look at this one thing. When we try to push away the inevitability of change and paradox, then we are using up an immense amount of mental, emotional, physical, and spiritual energy that when we stop pushing things away and we embrace them, that energy then comes back into our bodies, into our psyches, and we can use it to create more well-being, create wonderful things, and be happier, more calm.
You make the observation that the fear of change, which again, many people say that they're just afraid of change, they don't like change. But you make the observation that the fear of change is always accompanied by the fear of thought, by the fear of loss. And I thought that was
the
so...
Fear.
Yes, I'm sorry.
I didn't catch the... It's always accompanied by the fear of what?
Of loss.
Of love?
Of loss.
Oh, of loss.
Right.
Yes, yes, yes. Absolutely. The fear of change means that when is accompanied by the fear of loss, because our schedules, our certain ways of doing things, say moving to another city or another town, changing a job, those are sort of common things, yet then there's more traumatic things, more life-changing aspects. We lose friends. We lose our just knowing how to get around a town. You lose contacts. Yet you also gain another way of being in the world. You get new friends. You can connect differently. You find different ways. You adapt. And to be adaptable and flexibility is also those two aspects of being in the world are a huge part of becoming calmer. Because if we stay stuck, we stay stiff and frozen in our ways, then we are not able to move. We are not able to act. We are not able to think clearly. We are not able to connect with those that we need to be connecting to.
One of the things that I see happening a lot with people when the concept of change comes up, for those people who say, well, I don't really like change. And they may not say I'm afraid of change, but they say I don't really like change. I like things to stay the way they are. The fact that you have specifically said it is always accompanied by the fear of loss, I think is so important, because for those folks who are saying, well, that's just the way it is. I don't like change. That's just a part of who I am. If they can then ask themselves a next question, what is it I'm afraid of? I think there's so much new learning that can come out of that one question, which is very simple, but actually quite complex.
Absolutely. This whole subject is very simple and incredibly complex. So to ask a question of oneself when one is feeling anxious, fearful, whatever emotion is keeping one stuck or confused, is a powerful, powerful action to take with oneself. Questions can move reaction into response. Say one's partner, spouse is sitting there and they're feeling melancholy that day, and there's a list of to-dos, and you both were going to go do errands, and now your husband or wife or girlfriend or boyfriend or whatever are sitting there unable to gather the energy to go do them, and you become irritated. Yet, if one can just sit there and ask a question of, would you like to share what's going on? Or is there anything I can do to help? Or some compassionate, empathetic question that will open up a conversation and open up connection. Questions are... the word powerful doesn't even start to define how useful and incredibly loving they are and kind. They're an opening tool.
And for those who have lived or are living in households filled with silence, the idea of asking a question can, in and of itself, seem very frightening. But indeed, it is a way to open up so much that perhaps was previously hidden.
Yes, and it's also an art, this asking of questions, one which I've learned over a decade of coaching, because a question... can also be blaming or construed as non-caring by the other person if you yourself are not in a state of calmer, experience of the moment. One could be really irritated that you don't get to go cross all these things off of your to-do list because your partner is not feeling up to it. Or you can go, okay, let's be flexible, let's be adaptable, let's see if maybe I can go do these by myself, and if my partner wants to stay here and settle down, you can do that. And or there's a thousand possibilities in the moment, and it is a practice. It is, being calm is a practice, and it takes time, it takes awareness, it takes a deep kindness with others and with oneself.
Nancy, describe the awareness question. What's the concept behind each of those questions that you've created?
I put those questions, this one particular question at the end of each chapter in the book, as a way to, for the reader to begin, hopefully, if they're open and willing, if they choose to and can feel that they want to be calmer, that there are an initial question to oneself about what is going on with them in regarding the chapter that they have just read. And so in the first chapter about inevitable change, I ask, is there something that is shouting or whispering at the reader that is wanting to be changed? And to just sit a moment with those questions, with each question at the end of each chapter, one can begin to perhaps bring up things that in a busy schedule or in an unwillingness to look at certain things, we let slip by us in our daily lives. And in reality, they're incredibly important to pay attention to because they want to be listened to. And so each chapter has its own specific question, and hopefully they will give a reader an insightful look at what is going on with themselves.
One of the more powerful questions, if you will, that you ask, and I think they're all very thoughtful and they require reflection, which is so powerful. But one of the ones that you raise is so important. You suggest that the reader, I will suggest the listener, envision coming upon two conflicting parts of yourself while walking down the street. Extend your arms in welcome, encircling them both. What do you feel in this inclusive embrace? That is so powerful. That's extraordinarily powerful. What are your thoughts about?
Go ahead.
What were your thoughts as you were creating this question?
Paradox has been one of my own most powerful awareness tools in changing my turbulent brain to a calmer brain. And paradox covers so many things. It covers the fact that everyone around me and everyone out in the world is looking at the world differently than I am. So while I feel this way about this certain event or circumstance, and the person that I'm having this conflict with is seeing it in an entirely different way. And so if I can embrace both of us and then find that some point of understanding or that saying the agreement to disagree and shift my perspective, which will change the energy of the other person, except, in circumstances that are beyond our control, that are not part of our usual daily life. And so embracing the paradox of my father, embracing all the parts that he had, embracing all the parts of myself, so, or anything that it's contradictory to each other. I believe there's a line in a song, he's a walking contradiction, partly truth and partly fiction. And I'm blanking out on this very famous singer and songwriter who did that song. Yet that's what we encounter every day, and we encounter it with ourselves and with others.
What is disentangling, and why is that so important?
Well, disentangling is a concept that an anthropologist, who I quote in the book, discovered on an island in the Indonesian islands. And villagers would gather, and people would speak about their troubles. And their belief as these villagers was that anyone who was troubled by something and kept it silent was not healthy for that individual or for the community. And so disentangling was a village gathering where people came to speak about their story. And in that speaking and in that being heard, it wasn't about fixing what the person was speaking about. It was about being heard by the other villagers and the villagers listening, absolutely listening deeply to what that person said. And in just being heard, the energy would change. He or she would feel safer. That has happened in my workshops. It happens as I sit across from a client and I just listen. That's mostly what I do. I listen to what they are saying. They feel safe. They feel heard. They felt seen. And they feel seen. And that is one of the most powerful acts any of us can do for another person.
And it is often one that many of us dismiss as not doing anything. And in fact, it is doing so much.
Yes, absolutely. A client just recently told me that, well, first let me start with this, is that in my 10 years of practice, every single client who has sat before me, the greatest lack they've had is not being acknowledged, not being appreciated, not being validated. And a recent client told me that in the workplace, they have found that people in a workplace value being acknowledged and validated for their contributions over a raise or being given a supposedly more important position. And that's very telling. That just shows how much acknowledgement of oneself and those around us, what it does to a person's soul and to a person's spirit. And it can be done through just a smile also. You know, smile. Meet somebody by looking in their eyes. Help someone across the street. All these small actions of acknowledgement that this person exists and is of value, it ripples out.
And it ripples out in a way that's wonderful and positive and empowering on both sides.
Exactly. Exactly, Pamela.
You make the point, and now I'm going to quote from the Book of Calm. You say, to see only difference in others is to negate our shared humanity. And to see only our shared humanness is to ignore richness and complexity. Say more about that.
I took a class here in San Miguel from Mary Ellen Colon, who is a diversity expert. I can't remember her full title, yet she works with corporations and groups about going into different cultures and that transition one must make, knowing that every culture has such different ways of seeing the world. And that was incredibly eye-opening. And what I learned in that class is that to see everyone, to say, as Mary Ellen said, that, oh, we're all human, we all have hearts, we all have red blood, you know, we're all human, we're all the same. It's to negate, as I say, all those incredibly eye-opening differences that we all have from every level. And yet to just look at somebody through the eyes of, oh, they are so different, is to negate that they too are human. So again, the paradox of life and of being human on this planet shows up in the diversity of over 7.5 billion different people on the planet, their own individual selves, the influence of their family and their childhood and their culture. I mean, it's that when one looks at that, it's mind-boggling. And yet to stay unfrozen from such an immensity of this perspective is to hunker back down and into one's self, one's family, one's community, and begin to watch oneself and share with others about this incredibly important aspect of our diversity and our sameness happening all at once.
You say that travel kills bigotry and ignorance. How does it do that? What do you mean by that?
Well, that was a quote from a friend who shared her family story of moving from L.A. to Mexico. And they do travel a lot. And I believe that within her family, they innately knew that to celebrate the difference of all these cultures that they have visited, all these different countries, has made them larger people in their spirit and their souls. They can embrace more. They are more flexible and adaptable than if they had not traveled so much and met so many different people in so many different cultures.
It seems that fear in the world today is so powerful and guides so many people to behave and say so many awful things. If you had a magic wand, how would you use it?
A magic wand?
Yeah.
First of all, consider the source. Consider the voice that is telling you that this is happening and that person said that. We can become powerless at this moment in time with the influx 24/7 of incredibly negative news and what I call the talking heads opinions, and we can become frozen, we can become powerless, and just say, I can't do anything about it. And my magic wand would be to challenge yourself and say, what can I do? Not, I can't do anything, but ask that powerful question of oneself. What can I do to connect more, to bring well-being to myself and my family, my neighbors? What small things can I do to change this energy instead of becoming powerful or powerless? Become empowered by knowing that your experiences, the person that you are, is unique, and you have gifts, and you have strengths, and to use them so that they are beneficial and do no harm.
Nancy G. Shapiro, author of The Book of Calm. Her website, nancygshapiro.com. Thank you so much, Nancy, for joining us today on this edition of Mind Talk.
You're most welcome, and thank you, Pamela. It was a pleasure.
And folks, thank you for joining us today on this edition of Mind Talk. Mind Talk is brought to you daily as an educational public service, and it is not intended to replace any work that you might choose to do with a medical, mental health, or other professional. Mind Talk is produced by Jim Brown and 26x2 Communications and is available to you daily at mindtalk.org. That's mindtalk.org. You can also download the Mind Talk app from iTunes or Google Play. I'd love to hear your comments about today's program or any conversation you've heard here on Mind Talk. Please email me at Pamela, P-A-M-E-L-A, at mindtalk.org. Again, that's mindtalk.org. And remember always, if it's unacceptable, then it's unacceptable. You take care.